Would you tell us a little bit about the Women in Urban Crisis?
Well, Women in Urban Crisis was a coalition of virtually every woman's group in the whole city that you can think of, and it grew out of a conference that was called in the late 60s, following the Martin Luther King assassination. This conference was of women's groups was called by B'nai B'rith Women, and the Women in Urban Crisis then was an outgrowth of that conference. The women who all came together from all walks of life. That was really the beginning of the very strong reaching out from the whole white community to the minority community, and it was women trying to help other women. There was a vote taken that day at this big conference that was very successful, it was held at Chatham College, and I'm not good at numbers, but there were several hundred women there, and it was moved and passed, a motion was passed to form an ongoing organization, and that was the beginning, and it has continued over the years until just this last week or just very recently. I was away at the time of the board meeting when there was a motion to disband. Mm. Now they've left some machinery in place so that if it needs to be picked up again. We had a charter and all of that. We were incorporated, and we're just kind of going out of business in a way now. But I've been associated with the Women in the Urban Crisis since its inception.
Which was what year? Approximately.
The riots were what, 60?
Well, early 60s.
Early 65, 66, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Florence Reisenstein became very much involved, and she formed a task force whose goal was to try to alleviate tensions in the public schools. It was a kind of a human relations task force, and she called to serve on it everybody who was anybody in the field of human relations. And the last thing that she did, the last act of her life, actually, you know, she died in a tragic accident. It was a garage heater that the fumes got into the house. It was an attached garage, and the fumes from the car was left running accidentally. Mm-hmm. and the fumes killed her, and a group of that task force was meeting in her home that day. That was the last thing she did. Well, the Women in the Urban Crisis were absolutely devastated by her loss, because she was she wasn't the president or anything, but she was such a, I guess anything she touched, she became the center.
What was she like?
She was just a wonderful woman. Truly, I think she wasn't my first role model, but as an adult woman, I just really idolized her and idealized her.
Was she dynamic or powerful?
She was very soft spoken. I didn't know her when she was young. She was supposed to have been quite beautiful and had beautiful red hair, which was fading some by then. She had such a gentle manner, and she was like tempered steel. Mm-hmm. When when she decided that something had to be done, nobody could turn her down for anything. She was just a real leader and a perfect lady always, but just with such determination and such a sense of justice. She couldn't tolerate injustice of any kind, and she was just she was very, very concerned about that children should grow up to, you know, to respect one another. At any rate, I really don't remember how it happened exactly, but I was asked to then, after she died, we certainly wanted to continue the work of the task force, and I was asked to chair it. And nobody replaces a woman like Florence Reisenstein. But we were all, it was as though she were there. I remember the feeling of dedication and the need to achieve what she had, her vision,
right.
Really cemented that it wouldn't have mattered, I don't think, who chaired it. It really wouldn't have. She was kind of leading it all, even after she was gone. But, and of course, you know, how do you measure success? We certainly, you look at the schools and you know that there still is tension in the schools, and it was never really eradicated. But I think that we did manage to it was a consciousness raising thing. At least people were made aware that this was a poison and that it needed to be dealt with, and we did have some measure of success.
In what ways? Pardon.
Would you know how her name was proposed to be the name of the school that now is her name?
Well, I'm sure that it had partly to do with. I don't know how much what she had done in the area of education prior, but she was instrumental in. She was one of the founders of NEED, you know, the Negro Educational
Education for college.
Yes,
black
the,
college.
The black. It's yes,
black
a scholarship mm-hmm. funds for minority children, and her activities in that area. What's Herman's last name? Herman Reed, who was a principal of an all black elementary school, I think on the north side. I'm not sure.
Is that R-E-E-D?
R-E-I-D. Herman absolutely worshipped her, and he is a very strong mover. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he had something mm-hmm. to do with.
I often wondered.
But she was beloved in the black community, totally, as well as in the Jewish community. And since Reisenstein School was kind of in the middle of that turf where there was a name that I think they knew would be not only acceptable but would be received very positively by the black community, and they wanted it. I've always been glad, you know, that they did that, because it should be a kind of symbol. And my whole experience in Women in the Urban Crisis, I have made friends in that group with women that I never would have met or rubbed elbows with any other way, and they have remained my, we see, I mean, I don't see them all that often, but when we see one another on the street or at a function or whatever, there is such genuine affection and respect, and since we had a really working together.
Could you describe in a little more detail exactly what the task force did? How did you raise consciousness?
Well, it had the blessing of the board, Pittsburgh Board of Education, and there was a human relations component within the schools then. And I'm not sure what the status is of that now. It was certainly very badly needed at the time. Now maybe I don't think that they call it that anymore. Community relations was a whole department that was devoted to that. And we had the head of security served on it, and people like Alice Carter from the Urban League Education Department, who has been a strong force in helping, you know, in this whole area. Frieda Shapiro was actively involved, and it was a very broad-based, was then the Mayor's Commission on Human Relations. They were involved, the head of it, Jim Sims, who was then, who chaired the, what it was called then the Mayor's Commission, now it's the Pittsburgh Commission. It was a very high-powered group, and there were programs instituted in the schools, conscious efforts, you know, to bring divergent groups together. And
now I know of one program, which was the breakfast program that was run by Women in Urban Crisis. That was in the later years. Do you remember that? It was at Miller School. They used to serve breakfast before.
Yeah, that was not part of the task force.
I see. Oh, we're now talking about the task force.
That was the Reisenstein task force that existed for a number of years. I can't tell you exactly when it was dissolved.
Now that turned into the Women in Urban Crisis.
No.
This was separate. I'm mixed up.
No, it came out of the Women in Urban Crisis. It was established by the Women in Urban Crisis.
Excuse me.
And it wasn't called the Reisenstein Task Force until after Florence died.
Okay.
It was just a task force on education. But it's the task was to try to relieve tensions.
Can you talk a little bit about what the Women in Urban Crisis did? I was referring to the breakfast program.
Well, the breakfast program was a very
besides
important
the task force.
Part. Okay. They formed several ongoing committees, you know, what do you call those?
Task force.
No. Committee.
Panel.
Sorry,
it's like we have a council, you know.
Department?
No. They're mandated, you know. There were four. Okay. Permanent committees. On welfare, housing, education, and employment. Those are always the four. I mean, those were identified as the four areas that
only got two. Welfare, housing.
Welfare, housing, education, and employment. And they used to have conferences. The committees would run conferences, and there were handbooks there was a housing handbook that they had printed and published. And we did all this on absolutely no money. I don't know yet how we did it. I couldn't tell you exactly where the funds came from. Oh, we got some foundation money, and eventually had a. In the beginning, it was all volunteer run completely, and then we did get some money from PACE, and were able to hire a part-time executive director. And Charlotte Ginsburg was the, Charlotte Arnold now, was the first president. And
of
the Women in the Urban Crisis.
Was that where she started her career? She was a volunteer.
Well, oh, sure, yeah. She was a volunteer. She was a very active with B'nai B'rith Women, and she was one of the co-chairs, I think, of that first conference, and then she became the president.
Did she subsequently become a professional?
Yes. Yeah, well, she started, Charlotte started the program for, she didn't start it, but she became the director of the program for women offenders. That is, I don't know whether that was an outgrowth of, I don't think that was literally an outgrowth of Women in Urban Crisis, but one of the things that, one of the areas of concern was certainly, you know, women offenders, and council got into that whole area too. I remember when Margaret Syard, they were just trying to get some kind of you know, better facilities for women prisoners job training programs for women and helping them resolve the problems of women, incarcerated women, in handling their children. I mean, this is a terrible problem when mothers are imprisoned, and of course they're predominantly poor, and many, a very high percentage, are Black.
Is that Margaret Syard?
Dr. Syard's wife. That was one of. I mean, she's into other things too, but I remember going to some meetings of some kind of a task force and I think I was representing council. I don't remember what the name of it was, but the concern was with women and girl offenders, and eventually Charlotte became the director of this. Now, very fine agency that is recognized.
Do you have any impressions of Charlotte at that time? Was she
just a very capable, dynamic lady, and she certainly has more than proved herself. She was on one of the state government. She was very interested in juvenile justice too, and you know, something I'd forgotten all about that you and I worked on together, Marlene, was the CEA, the Citizen
That's
Education
right.
Action Group for Criminal
right.
Justice.
We'll have to make a note of that.
Well, just go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Charlotte was very much in evidence at that time. She served on a state commission that was working to reform the Juvenile Justice Act, and she, I know, worked closely with Joe Rhodes, who was then a state legislator, my state legislator for my district. Wonderful young man, who's now with Westinghouse, and I forget who his partner was in the legislature. There were two of them, but Joe was certainly a guiding light in finally getting a reform of the Juvenile Justice Act passed, and. NCJW was very much in the thick of that, and I think that, I don't know whether I was,
I think you were state.
Well, I think I was state public affairs chair at that time, and we worked, of course, across the state. That was one of council's priorities. And I did not have anything to do with any of the personally with any of the projects that arose out of all those juvenile justice activities. But I remember when we the section participated in the investigation that led to the publishing of the book Children Without Justice.
I wanted to back up a little bit. I thought that came first. Did you participate in the survey? There was a survey.
I know there was that.
Time,
that's
right.
What I'm talking about. I did not personally participate, but I was around at the time and certainly encouraged it. And then after that book came out, there was a big conference in Washington that on juvenile justice that NCJW chaired and convened. And boy, that was a who's who in the whole field of juvenile justice from all over the country. And that was a really major commitment of NCJW to juvenile justice. And I went from Pittsburgh.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, I went to that conference and you know
whose administration was that? You don't remember.
Can you just tell a little bit about that symposium? What you learned? I remember you making a report to the board on
yes.
how wonderful it was, and you brought back the book.
Well, they printed
children,
there is a printed report on it that I know that we have on file
right.
in the office, and I would kind of like to, it's just impossible I think to go into any of the details of it, but we had there was just a whole cadre of experts from all over the country that addressed us, and then there were workshops, and I think that some that there were some action steps approved, and that was all published in a report of the symposium itself, which I know exists. I might myself still have.
Then what was the step into you working on this legislation, our state legislation?
Well, that was I think that was the way I got involved was as state public affairs chairwoman, because we sections across the country
mm-hmm.
were getting into that. There was a lot of involvement in that.
Now that was a fairly recent kind of a job, wasn't it? We didn't always have a state public affairs person. Were you the first one?
Well, mostly the state public affairs person came from Harrisburg.
I see.
Mildred Hand had served for 10 years before I came along.
I see.
And I think that I succeeded her. And I came into that in 1975, and I served for 4 years. But I think that's in some form or other, that was always the way national functioned. That they they always had legislative priorities through the resolutions and the whole structure of NCJW. And they had always functioned in that.
Always that position then.
Yes, but I think I don't know that I was the first, but I was the first one for a long time, because it was preferable to have the state public affairs person chair in the state capitol. I had served as a vice chair with Mildred Hand for two years, I guess, before I became the chair, and then we kept trying to get a vice chair from Harrisburg without success. Mildred Hand is now back in that capacity, but we now have co-chairs, and our Sally Friedman is co-chairs now with Mildred.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah.
Sally's not the
No, they're supposed to be equal. They're equal status.
Okay.
But because of the district plan, mm-hmm. Harrisburg is not in the same district as Pittsburgh. They're Mid-Atlantic and we're Central, mm-hmm. and so that when it came to district conventions, when the chair, you know, we didn't have a state public affairs chairman attending central district conventions.
I see.
So that's why they decided to divide the job. Mm-hmm. And Pennsylvania is such a funny state anyhow. You know, the eastern and western halves of the state are like two. No, they're like two different states.
Like never the twain
shall meet, almost.
Right. Are you still involved?
Well, I think once you get involved in that whole field, I just have some kind of an affinity for legislation, and I'm active now, much more active politically, really, than I used to be. Working, you know, for the election of certain candidates, and really keeping contact with both at the state and the national level, and locally when it's appropriate to advocate for things that I believe very strongly in. And I called Representative Coyne yesterday to urge him to vote against the MX missile, and it was interesting. The young lady who answered the phone in his office was someone who had served on the Urban League board with me.
No kidding. Mm.
And she didn't even tell me her name, but she recognized my name. Mm. You know, I told her who
right.
I was. And she said, "Oh, I'm glad to hear from you." And she said that they were sending all those calls on to Washington. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Do you currently serve on any boards? Is that Mayor's Pittsburgh Commission still functioning? What used to be the Mayor's Commission?
Oh, I wasn't on that.
You were on some committee last year. You told me that. That was so interesting.
I'm now a board member of the Allegheny County Board of Public Assistance.
Yes.
And I've been on for about a year. And that's an experience. I wouldn't say that I'm enjoying it, because I'm always so upset at what I hear at the board meetings. I really, the whole welfare system is just so demeaning and dehumanizing. You know, I'm going to stick it out, but it's really sometimes what goes on, the things that I can't change, and I don't think any of us that serve, and there are a number of people serving with me now who feel the same way, and we do the best we can to advocate for the people, but they really make it a sin to be poor is all I can say. I was very pleased to be appointed, and I guess I had high hopes that maybe
appointed
I could
by
the governor, recommended by the chairman, who's Dr. Joseph Poise, and he turned in the name of several of four women, including me. Betty Pickett is one, and Margie McGregor, who is Judge McGregor's wife, and also an aide now to Senator Schweiker. Local office. Yes, that's a paid job. And Dr. Francis Holland. And he submitted all four of our names, and we're all a little cadre on the Board of Assistants, mm-hmm. who would like very much to change things. The county board just doesn't have the power really to be able to do much of anything. But
do they advise, or
It's a very frustrating position, because there is so little that you can do. But the one thing I think that makes me feel a little better about it is that there is a citizens advisory committee to the County Board of Assistance, and it is mandatory that a certain percentage of the citizens advisory committee be recipients, welfare, you know, oh. be